Hello, and welcome to Introducing Me. I'm your host, Sarah. I started this podcast to get to know other people and lifestyles while discovering more about myself. Each episode, I will give a new guest a chance to discuss their background, culture, interests, or whatever they want to talk about to help increase all of our own worldviews. Today, I would like to introduce you to Julia Davis. She is on TikTok, sharing a lot of good advocacy for so many different things, and sharing what she's doing in two small businesses, the Little Business Library and the Practical Planner. So I'm super excited to hear a little bit more about those and the reasons behind them, along with just more about Julia. So Julia, why don't you go ahead, say hello, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, hi, Sarah. First of all, thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be a part of Introducing Me. A little background on myself. I was born and raised in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, actually right down the street from the University of Alabama. And from a young age, I knew I wanted to go away for college. I wanted to get out of town, kind of spread my wings a little bit. And I just so happened to find this little liberal arts college called the University of Montevallo, which is in the smack middle of Alabama, literally the geographical center of the state. And it is the only public liberal arts college in the entire state of Alabama. And I fell in love with the university from the very first time I went to campus, and I didn't even look at other schools, truth be told. I knew that was the one, and that's where I wanted to be. And the University of Montevallo was the place where I really got to figure out who I was as an individual, you know, outside of my parents' household. My parents are wonderful. I adore and love my parents. I have great relationships with both of them. But Montevallo allowed me to really figure out what my ideas were on my own. And growing up, I never thought I would be Greek, ever. Neither of my parents participated in Greek life, none of my aunts, cousins, nobody. Nobody in my family had ever been Greek before, so it was totally foreign to me. But as soon as I figured out that I was going to Montevallo, I knew I wanted to give it a shot. And I am so glad I did, because Greek life at Montevallo was everything I could have ever imagined in a Greek life experience and more. I have always wanted to try my hand at leadership, but was never really given the opportunity to. In high school, I tried for various leadership opportunities and never quite got what I was looking for. I don't think I was what they were looking for. I went to a very small private high school that looked for one kind of person, and I was not that person. So I just didn't quite fit the bill for what they were looking for. But then when I got to Montevallo, I went through recruitment, and at that time I was fresh out of high school. So I had just spent 4 years being told that I wasn't quite what they were looking for. I wasn't good enough to be a leader. So that was a pretty fresh wound. And I met a Delta Gamma there named Jordan, and I'll never forget it. At the end of the recruitment process, she looked at me in the eyes and said, "I see potential in you. I believe in you. I think you could be a leader in Delta Gamma." And that was 5 years ago. And I have never forgotten that. I still love Jordan. She is one of my mentors that I look up to. I absolutely adore her. And having someone who barely knew me tell me that they saw potential in me changed my perspective completely of myself, of what I thought I was capable of. It changed my perspective on leadership. And sure enough, I became a Delta Gamma later that day. And the week after I was initiated, I was actually slated as director of social events. And that director gets to plan mixers and formal. And I absolutely loved that. And through planning formal, I discovered a love for event planning. And through that, some of my sisters saw me planning formal. And then a few years later, they were getting married and asked me if I would coordinate their wedding. And then long story short, I've got 6 weddings under my belt now that I've coordinated and absolutely love it. I adore wedding coordinating. So that's really fun. And after my year as director of social events, I was slated as the vice president of programming, who's in charge of the entire chapter's calendar, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it was a lot. And it kept me very busy. But I also got to plan the annual 3-day, 2-night sisterhood retreat. So that was really fun. I took my whole chapter to the beach because I'm insane, but it was really, really fun. And I also got to plan sisterhood events, which are events where the sisters get together and they kind of do bonding activities. So that was really neat. But through doing that position, I was using 3 different planners every day to keep my life, my school life, and Delta Gamma on track. And I just thought, this is not working. I cannot do this all the time. And so I was looking for a new planner, and I knew exactly what I wanted and I knew what I needed. And I found things that were really, really close, but they were anywhere from $80 to $100. And for a college student, I mean, that is just not feasible. And I thought, I know what I want. I'll just make it myself. Because like I said, I have nothing to do. Like it, I really had no business making a planner. But I designed it and then I copyrighted it. And I've been selling them ever since. And it's called the Practical Planner. And that's how the Practical Planner was born.
That's truly great. I think your college experience really, you know, gave you this awesome opportunity to figure yourself out. And it's always great to have, for someone to have such faith in you. So that's super awesome. So what is it like running the Practical Planner?
The Practical Planner has, it, just like any other small business, it has its great moments and it has its moments where it makes me want to rip my hair out. I've been selling it for 3 years now. This will be the 4th year. I released it in the summer of 2018. And at the time I was, you know, a sophomore going into my junior year of college. I was a VP in my sorority. I had a lot of other extracurriculars going on. So it was kind of a little side thing that I was enjoying. And then in 2019, I was slated as president of my sorority. And while that was incredible, it took up so much of my time that I wound up neglecting my business a little bit. And in the beginning, the planner did really, really well. And then I didn't put enough into it in that second year. And so it kind of dipped back a little bit. But after my presidency was over in the end of 2019, we went into 2020. Need I say more? It was a rough year for small businesses. And even though my planner is very competitively priced, it's still a niche product that is just not an essential for a lot of people. And so I struggled in that sense to kind of keep things up. And then with TikTok is honestly what saved my planner business. I went from having one sale in 3 months to having 40 in the span of a couple weeks. And it totally changed the game for the Practical Planner.
Yeah, it's crazy how social media will do that. And is awesome that you had that success. And TikTok, of course, is how I found you, which is super cool.
Yeah.
So what makes the Practical Planner special?
The Practical Planner was designed by a busy person for busy people, specifically for students. I think a lot of planners are designed with a really great aesthetic in mind, and that is fantastic. And there is an excellent market for that. But in terms of practicality, there are a lot of elements that are really lacking in some bigger name planners. So I wanted to create something that worked as hard as I did, which was saying a lot, because like I mentioned, I was doing way more than I should have been. But I wanted to create a tool. The planner won't do all the work for you, but it will help you do the work. I call the planner, it's a tool. It's there to help you. It won't do it for you, but it will help you. So in that sense, we start the hours on every single page at 7 and they go all the way through midnight. A lot of planners on daily pages, if they have hours, they'll end around 6 to 8 p.m. I have not met one college student whose day ends at 6 or 8 p.m. Even now as a graduate student, my days do not end at 8 p.m. So I pushed it all the way to midnight. And there's also a page for every single day of the year. As a sorority woman, Sundays were some of my busiest days, especially during my year as president. I would start meetings at 2 o'clock and I wouldn't get done until 9, 10 o'clock at night. And a lot of planners will split the weekend on one day. And that was just not practical for what I needed. So I gave every single day its own page. And a lot of planners will include holidays already. But when I was designing the planner, I wanted to include holidays for all of my customers. And while I may celebrate some holidays, I know that not all of my customers do celebrate those holidays. So when it came to deciding between, well, I'll include all the holidays or I'll include none of the holidays, because I want it to be inclusive for everybody. So I decided to leave holidays out of the planner and let the customer write in what holidays they choose to celebrate. But since I'm a little extra and I wanted to include something in there, because, you know, sometimes you open a planner and you're like, oh, I didn't know it was this day or national this day. So instead, I got inspirational quotes together from friends, family, whoever, and I hid them throughout the planner. There's one in every month, and they're kind of hidden in the little font at the bottom of pages. And they're applicable to everyone, no matter your background, religious background, racial background, no matter what, it's applicable to everybody. So, and that's something that I haven't seen in a lot of planners.
Yeah, that's definitely different. And I think about, you know, when you buy like a wall calendar and they do have a lot of the holidays, some of those days get pretty filled up.
Right.
So now you more recently started another small business, the Little Business Library. Can you talk a little bit about that journey?
Yes. So having a small business myself, I love supporting other small businesses. And I also happen to have a small business that has its own website. So one day I was sitting at working, and I was thinking about how I wanted to start buying all of my candles from small businesses. And I also wanted to buy from somebody who had their own website. I just think there's something so wonderful about shopping on a small business's website, because you get to see kind of the owner's personality through a website more than some other selling platforms. And I just really love that. And I think there's a great market for marketplace websites like Etsy, but I just wanted to find a small business website. So I took to Google and I found that it was remarkably difficult to find small business candle websites. In fact, I didn't find any, and I know they exist. I have friends who sell them. And then I thought, maybe there's a list somewhere or a directory that could help me find small business websites. And after another search, that also drew a blank. And that was in mid-January of this year. And the Little Business Library launched on March 2nd of this year. Which, again, should I have been doing that? Probably not. I'm a full-time graduate student, also working a part-time job during a panini. So I really should be focusing on some other things. But this was something that I thought was really important. And I wanted to create a space where customers could easily find links to small business websites and their social media accounts. And there are already really great established spaces for small business support. For example, the support spaces on Instagram and TikTok in particular that I've seen are really wonderful. Small businesses out there really support each other, and it's really, really awesome. But even on those platforms, the customer has to take a few more steps to actually get to that small business's website. So the Little Business Library takes those extra steps out and makes it that much easier to find small businesses.
Yeah. Also, I just want to say that I love that you just called the pandemic a panini, because that is a thing that people do on TikTok. So for anyone who is not on TikTok, TikTok users use other P-lettered words to not use the word pandemic.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I had to like not giggle while you did that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're okay. I gotta be inclusive for everyone. I know there are listeners who do not partake in TikTok.
Right.
So on TikTok, when you're talking about these small businesses, whether it's yours or all of the ones on the Little Business Library, you talk a lot about activism and civil rights and different things that you're doing that also relate to these businesses. So can you elaborate a little bit on that for the listeners?
Yeah. So advocacy is something that I've always been really passionate about, and I don't think I've really had a medium to portray that advocacy or put that advocacy out there until TikTok. And that's something that I really appreciate about TikTok. I never thought I would say I really appreciate a social media platform, but I do. I really appreciate that TikTok allows me to share some of these ideas And it has allowed me to create a space on my page or my feed that is very intolerant of things such as hate, harm, and the spread of misinformation. I don't tolerate that at all. I don't tolerate it in the comments. And it's kind of like that we are intolerant of intolerance. And that's something that I wanted to incorporate when forming Little Business Library. And I'm not sure if a lot of people have seen it yet, because I know a lot of people don't read terms and conditions. But when I was writing the terms and conditions for Little Business Library, I wanted to make sure I included elements that made Little Business Library a space that was free of hate, harm, and misinformation. And, you know, in the business world, there's this idea that business is business and businesses want to make money. So they don't necessarily adopt some of these ideas because they're afraid it could have financial implications for them. But I really wanted to make it a point that businesses that sell products or services related to the spread of hate, harm, or misinformation would not be welcome. I'm sure that some people would look at that and say, well, you're going to lose my business, or you must not like money. But truth be told, I am more afraid of creating a space that turns a blind eye to these issues than I am of losing a few customers, whether that be people who want to buy from my own business, The Practical Planner, or from people who want to shop from businesses in Little Business Library, or who want to list their business in Little Business Library.
Yeah. And I think that's a truly great stance to take. You know, as you said, you just don't want to tolerate it, so you're not allowing it to happen. Have you had any issues where, obviously, the Little Business Library is, you know, celebrating about 1 month when this episode goes live. So it hasn't been around for a long time, but you already have a bunch of listings. Have you had issues with that clause, or like, are you prepared to, what if it does happen?
That is a really great question. I've been very fortunate so far that I haven't had any applications that really fell in that category. And I'm going to say that when it does come up, I can credit my year as president of a sorority with making it so that I can deal with that. Being president came with a lot of uncomfortable situations where I had to have difficult yet professional conversations with my peers, with advisors who were, you know, like the adults above us, like we're adults, but like they are the adults. And there were times where I had to have really hard conversations with some of them and even say like, we're not going to do that. And here's why. This is not acceptable and blah, 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 blah. So in that sense, I don't want to jinx myself and say that I am prepared, because there are always going to be scenarios that you're not prepared for. But I also am currently pursuing my master's degree in advertising and public relations. So we talk a lot about communicating and dealing with crisis situations, which that might not be considered a crisis, a micro crisis, probably, definitely not a macro or a large crisis. So in that sense, I feel a little bit prepared. And my undergraduate degree is in communications and public relations. So I did 4 years of studying on just on this topic.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like you said, with presidency, you've had difficult conversations. So hopefully, you know, you don't have to deal with them. But if and when it comes, it works out. So what is it like for a small business to list on the Little Business Library?
So any small business can list on the Little Business Library as long as they don't sell multi-level marketing products or anything that relates to hate, harm, or misinformation. And a huge difference with selling on Little Business Library versus some other marketplace websites is the Little Business Library does not charge sales fees at all, ever. And that's because all of the sales are happening on your own website. We will never be involved with the checkout process when someone is buying something from you or getting a service from you. So to list in the library does cost $4 a month after a 30-day free trial. So you can kind of figure out if you like it. And as of right now, it's actually taking me about 2 weeks to get to your listing after you send in an application. Since it is so new, it's not very technologically advanced yet. So I manually enter all of the businesses information, like every single thing you see on the website, I typed at one point, which times 180 applications winds up being pretty time consuming. So yes, it does cost money to list your business in the library, but you will save money in other places. And most businesses, I would guess, find that they save money by listing on Little Business Library and selling on their own website versus selling on some other platforms that will take a percentage of every single one of your sales.
Yeah, that's definitely understandable. Now, what's your long-term goal with the Little Business Library?
It has never been my goal to own my own business. I watched my parents own their own private practice and how hard that was. So I always said, oh, I never really want to do that. You know, here I am with a wedding coordinating business and a planner business and a website business. So for the long term, truthfully, I would be okay and would love if this grew into a business that could support me enough that I could give my full-time attention to this website. I would love if it grew enough that I could start marking things off of a list that I have, which is things I would do if I had enough money to do them. And in one of my TikToks, I talked about some of those things that, you know, someone made a comment and said, oh, you're going to be a millionaire. And my first thought was, that's great. I don't want to be a millionaire because I never want to have that much money. I will never need that much money. The things that I will need in life will never cost that much money. And if that kind of money ever does come my way, I have a list of things I would like to do, like paying off a stranger's student loan debt or paying off someone's car debt or paying for a year's supply of, you know, groceries for somebody or paying for a lifetime of eye care for somebody. Those are things that I would like to do. And, you know, when I was young, I had that saying or goal of, oh, I want to change the world. And since that, you know, every little kid says that. And since then, that kind of rings true still, but it's changed to, I want to change some worlds because I personally can't change the whole world, but for one person, a car could change their world, or a year's worth of groceries could change their world, or someone just saying to them, I believe in you, I think you have potential, that could change someone's world. That changed my world when Jordan said that to me my freshman year of college. It really did. And I think we underestimate like how much our words can mean to somebody or what someone's words will mean to someone 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road. So I would like the business to grow enough that I could afford to do things like that and that I could afford to pour into people the way that my sorority sisters poured into me and that my family has poured into me. That would be my long-term goal.
I love that. And I think that video that you were talking about on TikTok was the one that kind of really sparked like, hey, this girl's awesome, doing great things. Like, let's have her come and talk a little bit more about things. So why TikTok and how has your TikTok experience been?
My TikTok experience has been a very unexpected journey, I will say. I had the app probably for an entire calendar year before I ever posted anything. And my first video, my boss in admissions at the University of Montevallo actually asked me to make a little video for her. So I did. And then I didn't post really anything else. And I maybe had a couple videos here and there, but I really wasn't into it. I just loved sitting on my For You page, you know, addicting, sit there for hours. And I made a short, probably 10-second video about being president of a sorority one day. And I came back to it and it had 70,000 likes. And there were also questions in the comments of, well, what was this like or what was that like? And so I started making response videos and people started asking more questions and things kind of snowballed from there. And my initial thoughts when that was happening was, you know, like, I'll just ride out this little wave. It'll last a few weeks, maybe a month or two. Like, this is great, but it won't last because I'm not a social media guru. Like, people follow my Instagram now, but my Instagram is pathetic with a capital P. It's not cute. I don't have a theme. I don't use hashtags. I really don't. I just post what I, yeah, it's not great. So I really did not think that it would do well in the long term. And then I had another video that got tens of thousands of likes and another one. And I started talking about different things, like my dog, who is my best friend. And she just so happens to have survived a gunshot wound to the face. And people love her story, but I love her for, you know, who she is. But we got more questions about that. So we started talking about Remy and my little bestie. And I made a video about my cat, and people started talking about my cat. And then one day someone said something about me growing up to be an Avon queen or, you know, the MLM queen. And I was like, oh no, that's not me. Let me tell you what I do. And so I started making videos about my planner, and that started doing well. And then I started talking about advocacy from there, because that is something that is so important to me and to my business that I wanted to include that. And I honestly thought I would lose people after that, because unfortunately, some people just don't want to hear about advocacy, or they just want to get on the app for the laughs. So I thought, well, I want to talk about advocacy, but people stay for the laughs. So what can I say that will make people laugh and listen to what we have to say about advocacy? And I have a really like catchy punchline on there that I don't want to say here, but if people want to hear it, then go check it out. They probably won't be disappointed.
So what are you doing with advocacy? Like, what sort of things are you able to share and get people to hear?
So from January 9th, I'll say, which was a few days after the events at the Capitol on January 6th, I saw a really big kind of outcry from the Black community. And last year was a really, really big and awesome resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement. And I have supported Black Lives Matter for a long time. My parents have taught me about civil rights from a very young age. And I really appreciate that that's something that they instilled in me from a young age. And I really appreciate that about them. And after the events of January 6th, I saw kind of a second outcry about, you know, the inequality that people get in situations like this. And so I decided from them that I would donate 100% of the profits from my planner until January 20th, which was inauguration day. So kind of like to catch us through to the end of this tumultuous 4 years, I would donate all of my profits, which wound up coming in around $600, which is not a lot to an organization like Color of Change, which is who I donated all of the profits to. But to me, that's a lot of money. But I knew that that organization and the work that they do could use that money so much more than I ever could. And I'm not going to lie, I struggled financially there for a little while, but that's something that I was willing to do to show that I'm not just going to talk the talk here. And I think that being an advocate is wonderful when you're talking the talk, because we need to hear these things, and we can only hear it if you're talking. But I want to show you that I'm serious, and I want to walk the walk as well.
That's really awesome. Now, what are your plans for future advocacy?
I would absolutely love if my platforms, no matter what they are, continue to grow in a sense that I get opportunities like this, like talking on a podcast, like talking in a 60-second TikTok is fantastic, and you can get a lot through in 60 seconds. But, you know, like I said earlier, TikTok is a platform where people go to laugh, and that's great. But I would love to have more opportunities like this where I can come and speak for a little bit longer about some of these issues. And my ultimate goal, I guess, would be to educate more, because I have a lot that I need to learn about these issues, and I would love to find resources and then share them in such a way that other people could learn from resources that I get to learn from. Most recently, earlier this week, I made a Stop Asian Hate video, and I did a good bit of research. I was actually researching for that video for a couple of weeks before I posted it. And I talked about some things that I learned about in school and some things that I actually didn't learn about in school that I only learned through research from a question that someone had asked me saying, hey, will you make a video about, you know, the hate towards the Asian community if you're so big into advocacy? And I was like, absolutely. Just give me a few weeks so I can be educated before I talk about this. And in the comments, there were several people who said, oh, I didn't know that. Thank you for telling us. And I want more people to know about some of these things because it's important to know what has happened because we can't change the future if we don't know where we're starting. We can't create solutions with the same thought, knowledge, and ideas that created the problem that we're trying to solve. So I would love if at some point I had a platform large enough that I could educate more people or that I could bring on more people to educate because I don't know all of these things and I'm definitely not qualified to talk about all these things. But if people are coming to me to get a laugh and then I've got a social advocate here who knows what they're talking about to speak to them, be like, hey, surprise, you're going to learn something today. That would be really awesome.
Yeah. And that's, you know, we were talking a little bit beforehand on like why I started this podcast and how it all came about. And that's, you know, kind of one of my goals is, you know, learn more, get educated. And for me, it's just by talking to people. So I love hearing what your hopes are. So what else would you like, you know, people to hear? You know, you talked about change. I think it's so important to hear. What kind of things would you like to advocate for right now?
I would love to advocate for the idea of changing our language when we're asked to. Because I may not realize that something that I've said is not preferred, like with somebody's pronouns or in a video I recently posted, I was talking about Asian hate and I had used the hashtag Asian Lives Matter. And someone in the comments actually corrected me and said, hey, we actually prefer if you said stop Asian hate because we think Asian Lives Matter takes away from Black Lives Matter. And my response was, oh my gosh, thank you for telling me. Absolutely. I will change my language from now on. Thank you for taking the time to tell me that. And I know when we get corrected on something, sometimes our first instinct is to go, well, wasn't that a great sentence? But our first instinct is to kind of put our defenses up and think, well, I'm right. And here's why I wrote blah. Or when someone corrects us about their pronouns, but truth be told, it cost us nothing to make that shift and to make that change. And someone would say, oh, well, it cost me the mental calories or it cost me like the mental capacity to make that change. I'm like, but if it was you, you would want someone to afford you that, to spend that effort to respect you enough to use these terms that they like. And because it's not me, I don't understand, but thank you for telling me, and I will make that change from now on, is something so easy that we can do. And I think that respect for others is really lacking in some places. Some people rock at it and are really great, and some people are just really lacking that respect for others. And I would love if we could talk more about, you know, as a society, of how little it actually cost us to make those shifts. And language like that is important. I know there's a whole debate of, is language important? Is it, you know, blah, blah, blah. We can't live our lives worried about offending somebody else. And while we can't, we also can't live with this idea that we are incapable of making these shifts for the sake of somebody else, because we are capable of that. And we should be capable of that. And we should be making those changes when possible. And when it's pointed out to us, because people are very polite in asking, oh, I prefer this, or please don't say this. Like, absolutely, I will make that shift. And then you thank them for taking the time to ask.
That's a great platform to share, and I really appreciate that you did that. You know, I think with your business, you promote advocacy, so to hear a little bit more on a specific topic is really great. So thank you. So, you know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you kind of got TikTok famous, viral, you got all the views, all the likes from Sorority Life. And you've talked a little bit about Sorority Life. Can you share just a little bit more on what Sorority Life meant to you and some of the behind the scenes? Obviously, you can't talk about certain things, but whatever you can talk about.
Right. So as I mentioned, growing up in Tuscaloosa and having no family be a part of Greek life, the only things I knew about Greek life were what I'd seen in movies and what I saw in the news and media and what I saw even here in my hometown. You know, UA is famous for its Greek system and, you know, football and Roll Tide and all that. But I did not have the best outlook on Greek life until I got to the University of Montevallo. And I saw that it was much more about leadership and the friendship and the scholarship and the philanthropy than it was about the social aspects. The social aspects are still there, but it was much more focused on the bonds that you build with other women, even in other chapters, your scholarship, your philanthropic service. All of that was just really important. And I got that from the moment I became Greek until even now. It doesn't stop. I was going to say until the moment I left, but truth be told, you don't really leave. Greek life is a lifelong membership. At least it is for my sorority, Delta Gamma. And I still feel very connected and bonded with the women that I was in the chapter with, and even women from all over the country that I've gotten to meet and connect with through Delta Gamma. And I'm very, very grateful for that. In terms of my personal experience, I think Delta Gamma gave me everything I could have wanted in a sorority and more, which is saying a lot because I had so little to base it off of going into it. But I was able to be a leader like I had never been able to do before. I was able to make bonds with other women like I had never really been able to make before. I got to live with 30 of my best friends. And that was so cool. We played pranks on each other all the time. Okay, I played pranks on people all the time. I'll be really honest. I got a lot of those like tiny plastic babies, like they go in the Mardi Gras cakes, and I just like sprinkled them around in everybody's room, and I put googly eyes on everything. And it was just so much fun. But I was like, when else in my life am I going to be able to do that? When else in my life am I going to get to live with 30 of my best friends? That's just not really going to happen again. So everything that I could have possibly wanted in a Greek experience, I got in Delta Gamma at the University of Montevallo. And I think if it had been at another school, I don't know if I would have had the same experience even in Delta Gamma, because, you know, there are 150 something Delta Gamma chapters all over the United States, Canada, and the UK. But the University of Montevallo allows a kind of bond to prosper in chapters that I don't see in a lot of other schools.
And so then what was it like after graduation? So you had just had this great sorority experience living with everybody, and now you've got a dog and a cat.
Yeah. So, and I've only mentioned this a couple times in my TikToks, but 2020 was actually my senior year. So I was supposed to graduate in May of 2020. And there were lots of, you know, kind of senior accolade type things that I was really looking forward to that were postponed and postponed again, and then ultimately canceled. So it was honestly a little bit of a traumatic ending to the greatest 4 years of my life that turned into 3.5 years. But my friendships with the women are the same. And I really appreciate that. And I still adore the chapter, love them, support them however I can. But leaving in the way that I did was honestly not fun. And I'm not going to sugarcoat that. It was not how I anticipated at all. And I'm a very sentimental person. So I'm all about all the first and the last and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And a lot of the stuff that we missed was the sentimental stuff, like, oh, your senior formal, senior night, where, you know, it's all about the seniors, and that stuff didn't happen. And ultimately our graduation was postponed. And right now it's still kind of like, is it going to happen? We don't know, but I'm halfway through my master's degree now. So I'm not sure if we'll ever get to go back. But now, being an adult and an alum, you know, with a dog and a cat and living in my own little space, I feel like my time in the sorority gave me the tools I needed to be a productive member of society. So I think there are lots of people who can go through school and life not really contributing to society, but it's always been my goal, and my parents really made it a point that you were going to be a productive and contributing member of society. By gosh, you will be this. And everything that I needed to learn about life that I couldn't learn in the classroom, I was able to learn through my experiences in my sorority. Things like how to have hard conversations with your peers, how to budget, how to plan a meeting, how to write professional emails, you know, how to really manage your time, how to work with other people. And lots of people get those experiences through a job or through their classes and all that kind of stuff. And I learned a lot in my job, in my classes, but I applied it in my sorority. So I felt very fortunate that I was able to have that experience. Even though it ended the way it did, I'm still so thankful for the time that I had.
And it sounds like you appreciate it so much. And I feel for all of the 2020 graduates and the uncertainties of everything that's yet to come. But it sounds like you've got a good head on your shoulders, and that you really appreciate it.
I do my best.
So before we start to wrap things up, is there anything else that you would like to share with the listeners about you?
I do want to share my favorite piece of advice that I try to share with people when I can and when I think the time is appropriate. And when I talk to someone, I ask them to think of something that they're currently going through or that they're dealing with behind closed doors, something that they're either facing or holding by themselves that they don't really share with other people, and how heavy that can be or how much that weighs on them. And then I tell them, now, every single person that you pass today on the sidewalk, or every person that you talk to, all of your friends, all of your family, everyone has something like that. Everyone has an unspoken battle that they're facing, and you don't know how heavy that is for them that day. So when in doubt, and when you can, just be kind and be nice, because we very easily can, you know, we easily weigh what we're carrying and we know like what we can handle that day, but we don't see what other people are carrying by themselves. So just as much as possible, be as kind as you can, because you never know what someone's carrying that day.
That's some great advice. Now, with all of my guests, I ask a random question at the end, which doesn't have to do with anything of importance.
Great.
So my question for you is, what trend from past, like this could be anything, something you've lived through, something you before your time, would you either like to come back, or you just never want to see again, or you can do both?
Ooh. I'm gonna talk about some fashion trends. So things that I love, the kind of like bombshell curls, kind of like classic, I guess that would be 50s maybe. I'm not great with time periods, but whatever Blake Lively wore to like a red carpet event once, like these like bombshell curls, I love that. I adore that. I want those to make a comeback. And I never want to lay eyes on a pair of low-rise jeans again. These people just have such faith in so little fabric. I could never. I do not understand. It makes me nervous to see it on other people. Like, wow, there's, anyway. So low-rise jeans make me nervous. I could never. So if those ever come back, I don't know what I'm going to do. But I guess I'll just be untrendy, which would not be new for me. I've not been on trend for most of my life. So I would survive.
All right, that brings this episode to a close. I will be leaving links in the description for the great businesses that Julia has been talking about. So the Little Business Library and the Practical Planner, along with her TikTok handle. So if you're not already following her, you can go check out the awesome work that she is doing there. And of course, information about the podcast is in the description as well. We are on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and then we have a Patreon page for monetary support if you would like to support the podcast. And if you would like to be a guest on the podcast, my email is in the description always as well. So I always love hearing new stories, whatever that may be about. So I look forward to connecting with some of you. And thank you, Julia, so much for spending time with me today. I've loved hearing all of your stories, and to my listeners for taking the time out of your day to hear a new story. Until next week, bye.
Thank you, Sarah. Bye, everyone.